Good evening and welcome to the October 15th regularly scheduled board meeting for San Luis Coastal Unified School District. The board met in closed session to discuss a matter of anticipated litigation. And now we will move to, I will ask if we have consensus on the order of business. Everyone good? Ms. Dawson, I'm going to note that Mr. Unger and Mr. Millar are both absent this evening. Next, we have approval of minutes from October 1st, 2019. Any changes, revisions, comments? Otherwise, I would like a motion, please.
I'll move approval of the minutes.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Ms. Frain. All in favor? Next, approval of the minute. With one, and then Mrs.
Yes,
Roger.
I believe I was absent.
So we have one, two, three. Okay, so we're still good. We still have a majority in favor. Next, the approval of the minutes from our study session on October 10th. Any changes, revisions? Then a motion, please.
I move approval.
Okay, we have a motion by Dr. Eisendreth Rogers, a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor? Aye. Mrs. Roger?
I'll have to abstain because it was absent.
Thank you. Next, we have a student representative of the board. Thanks for coming, Gregory.
How's it going, everyone? So 2 weeks ago at SLO High School, we had our Start with Hello Week. The whole point of this week was to make SLO High more inclusive and have new people meet other faces, just to get everybody together and have the campus be more inclusive. So we started with clubs and other sports organizations. They're at the entrances of each day that week, and they just said hello to everybody. And we also passed out numbers, so we went from 1 to about 1,600, or no, 1 to 800, and we had duplicate numbers, and so if someone had the number 2 and another person had the number 2, they would match up, and so they would get a free prize, but it was all in an effort to make the campus more inclusive. This week we also had our homecoming week. And so we changed it up a little bit. So in the past, it's been homecoming king and queen. But this year, we made an adjustment. And so we wanted to break away from the gender stereotypes. And so we only had one person. And it was called the homecoming tiger, or tiger of homecoming. But basically, this person resembles just a great SLO High student, and it could be anybody, and we didn't want to have it be a man and a woman. So, that was our homecoming week. And the homecoming tiger wins $250 for their club they represent. So each club chooses one person. And they also get free tickets to all of our events, so they can get free tickets to homecoming, winter formal, prom, etc. But, we got a lot of stuff going on at SLO High, and it's a good week. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thanks a lot. And thanks for coming all the way out here. We appreciate it very much. It's always great to hear what's going on at the schools from someone who's there. And if you need to head on out to take care of school-related business, we certainly understand. But, of course, you're welcome to stick around as long as you'd like. Thank you. Right. Next, Los Osos Middle School program highlights.
Yes, good evening. I want to introduce Mr. Bloom and Mrs. Donnelly are both here with some students and Los Osos Middle School highlights.
Good evening. I think we need to go to the other presentation. That's Laura's. Perfect. Well, first of all, welcome and thanks for coming out to Loams. sort of the meeting that we get to present at. We love it that it's here. So what I want to do is introduce two of our student senators. This is Emma Trujillo and Natalie Osorio Hernandez. They've both been on our superintendent senate now. This is their second year. Emma's an eighth grader and Natalie's a seventh grader. And what they're going to talk about and share with you is a little bit of information about how the Youth Truth Survey from last year is kind of shaping LOMS and how we're continuing to work within that model as we're going to take that survey next Tuesday. And then as they present, they have some information to share that's not on the slides. So if you will follow along on the slides, they didn't want to read them to you. So we're going to present that way. And this thing will control everything, except when I need the video, you'll hit the video. Okay. All right, girls, you're up. Come right up here. There you go. You guys can stand right there. There you go.
This is our 2019 student senators.
Hold on. Can you advance? I'll just point. Say it again, Matt.
This is our 2019 student senators. These are goals from last year. Since we haven't taken the survey yet, we all continue to keep trying to reach these goals. But if we met one of these goals, we will develop another goal. As a second-year student at LOMS, I am actually seeing some of these goals addressed. The thing I see in my classes are more connections between teachers and students. In preparing for the Youth Truth Survey, the senators made a video that was shared with every advisory class. And we're going to talk to the whole school during their PE classes about this.
Don't mind the director of the video. It wasn't a very good one.
Next week. We are looking forward to hearing.
This is something new that we didn't get the opportunity to do last year. We are excited to have these extra opportunities to work with our teachers and staff meetings and in planning a brunch.
So you can see some of the things that we're going to work on this year, because last year we got our results but didn't necessarily have a lot of time to like really start moving forward. So we're concentrating on the same goals as they stated, and then this is kind of the way we're going to be pushing it out a little more intensively throughout the site.
This is our goal with the Youth Truth Survey. Any questions?
I do have a question. So by staff, do we mean faculty and staff at the school? So teachers and staff. Great. Mm-hmm. And so the meetings the students are attending are the teaching for
so
everyone together?
One is TCT, staff meetings at the end of the day. We actually, around the goals that they determined for us for this year, we've included all of our classified staff members. So not just teachers, because we know that our paraeducators, our custodians, and our secretaries all connect with kids.
Right. Good. Great.
Anyone else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll be very interested to hear the results. Next item on our agenda is the 2018-19 Personnel Commission Annual Report.
Well, hello. I'm so excited to introduce you tonight to Becky French and Julie Jones, two of our members of the Personnel Commission. Becky served on the Personnel Commission for 7 years and Julie for 5 years, and so they are both here tonight. Usually we just get one Personnel Commissioner, but tonight we get two. So I'm going to turn it over to them to describe the activities over the last year of the Commission.
Thank you, Kristen. Welcome. My name is Becky French, and good evening to Dr. Prater and members of the board. I'm here to present our annual 2018-19 Personnel Commission report, and as Ms. Newlin said, Ms. Jones is here as well. Before I touch upon some of the highlights of the year, I want to give a brief overview of the Personnel Commission. We try to do this every year, and it's been a few years since I've been up here. So the Commission is an independent body responsible for overseeing the merit system. So what is the merit system? Well, the fundamental purpose of the merit system is to ensure the selection, promotion, and retention of classified employees is based upon merit and fitness without favoritism or prejudice. District employees covered under the merit system are non-certificated staff, which includes classified employees represented by SEIU, CSEA, as well as non-represented classified staff, which would be classified managers, confidential employees, etc. The Personnel Commission is made up of 3 members. Ms. Jones is the member that is selected by the board, and then Ms. Gail Sears, who's not here today, she's our longtime member. She's selected by the classified staff and CSEA, and then those 2 board members select the 3rd one, and that happens to be me. My term expires soon. I think it's December. And I believe, based on our last meeting, it appears as though my fellow commissioners would like me to continue. So I'm happy to continue. It's a really fun group. Mm-hmm. All right. So the commission meets monthly, typically the 4th Wednesday of the month. And we work on issues related to job descriptions, classifications, reclassifications, hiring, transfers, employee appeals, revisions to the merit system rules, and a lot of other things. We welcome people there. We don't get a lot of visitors at our meetings. They're usually around 3:30 in the afternoon. We would love to have people there. I know it's a tough time, but all of you are welcome at any point. We'd love to have people there. So I think in your packet you've got our actual report, and our goals and activities are all outlined in that report. I did want to mention a few items. I'm not going to go over each one in there. Couple of things. This past year, the staff revised the Personnel Commission portion of the website, so we now look like the board member section, where we have our names and our photos and how long we've been there when our term expires. So it's kind of nice to have all of that similar together and to put a name with a face for the staff, because we are kind of hidden, or we don't get out there that much, and we don't have a lot of people at our meetings, so it's nice to have that information out there. And I have gotten a couple of emails from staff, so it's kind of nice. It's getting out there. All right. Ms. Newland and her staff have kept the commission up to speed on the rollout of Helios. I think that's mentioned in there. That's the new online employee records and onboarding system. And I wanted to highlight that. I think it's pretty important. Not only will it free up some physical space in the human resources office, because we hopefully won't need to bring in more paper and filing cabinets, but it also should help expedite the onboarding process, as well as allow all staff to access much of their employment information immediately, rather than having to wait for a response from someone. You know, so if you want to know your sick leave accrual, you want to know your hire date. The old ways that you've got to pick up the phone or email and call someone and get that information, because I don't know about everybody else, but it's hard for me to find that information at home. So this will be great when everything is rolled out, where people can help themselves, and that will free up, hopefully, the human resources staff to do other important things as well. Not that they don't want that communication, but it's going to help. Let's see. So Ms. Newland and her staff are taking, it'll take time to roll everything out, but it's another step that Ms. Newland and her staff are taking to streamline the processes and enhance services provided to employees. The next area I wanted to just briefly touch base with on the report is the recruitment section, which I think is on the fourth or fifth page of the report. As you can see, those numbers in terms of completed applications received, written examinations, oral examinations, past couple of years, those have trended upward significantly. If you look at the completed applications received, 17-18, 448, and 18-19, 609. Now, that's not necessarily qualified. You know, every one of those applicants is qualified, but it takes the staff time to look through that many more. So the workload just increases and increases. And they do an awesome job, and, staff is a big thing, so the recruitment process is extremely important, critical to the organization. Let's see. Everything, applications, written exams, all those increase. I lost my place here. The other thing I wanted to just talk about briefly up there was the playground supervisors. So there was, I believe, an amendment to Ed Code 45256 that now deems the employees in playground positions in the classified services are permanent employees. So that number, the 30 exempt playground supervisors that became permanent, that is included up above in the new hires that went from 75 in 17-18 to 90 in 18-19. So those were people we had on board, on staff already. However, all of the stuff that goes with hiring somebody and maintaining them goes with that. So we did, we had an increase in the number of people hired, and even though they were current, we still had to do all this stuff and still need to continue to do stuff to support those new hires. Okay. Last one more thing I wanted to bring up, which I like to bring up every year, is each year we go out, we try to hit a couple of different sites for our meetings. Usually our meetings are held in the Human Resources Department, but this year staff arranged for us to go to C.L. Smith and Bishop's Peak, and it's always fascinating to go out to sites, especially with everything that's going on right now and all of the building and improvements. And so typically we have our meetings and we get to have a little tour there as well. I really wanted to go to Slow High, but we're not quite there yet. I don't think we've got. I think we need to wait. Hopefully next year we'll be able to do that. But in the past we've been to Morro Bay High, so the staff has been great, and it's also a great way for us to get out there and to be visible. People see us, see what we're all about as well. So we really appreciate being able to go out and do that. And it reminds me, we probably need to do one here at some point. Okay, I think that's the main highlights I wanted to pick up. I'd like to end by acknowledging Ms. Newland and the other Personnel Commission staff. They make our jobs as commissioners super easy and really fun. Staff are always well prepared for our meetings. They follow through with items to be researched and brought back to us. And they keep us well informed of everything that's going on in the district as well. Ms. Newland usually will come in and have an update from board meetings or other things, and so that's really, really helpful. And it's a nice way for us to connect, and then if we see staff out in the field, we can say, oh yeah, we heard about that, or we know about that, or let me research that. So that we appreciate all the work that they do for us. And then in closing, on behalf of myself and my fellow personnel commissioners, I'd like to thank Dr. Prater and the members of the board for their ongoing support. We appreciate all that you do for our students, our staff, and our community. So thank you very much. And if you have any questions, we'll be happy to respond.
Any questions from the board? Dr. Eisendorf, Rogers.
It's not a question, really. It's just a big thank you for your service and for the time that you spend and the care that you give. And you're sort of the hidden figures of our organization, and we appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I try and come to a meeting every couple years, and I haven't made one last year or this year, so I'll have to head over. So thank you. Thanks for the report.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. So next on the agenda is correspondence, and as of the time of the posting of the agenda, no official correspondence had been received. Okay, at this time, this is the time for public comment for items either not on the agenda or if something is on the agenda but you wanted to speak now, you're welcome to. Speaker time is limited to 3 minutes, and Ms. Dawson takes care of that. Is there anyone here for public comment at this time? All right. Now we'll move into superintendent updates, business and budget.
Yeah, just a couple of quick things. Chris Bonin and myself, the county's putting on some FEMA workshops, and so there was one 2 weeks ago. We have another one tomorrow, so Chris and I will be attending that. And so it's going to be helpful in the case of an emergency. You have to have trained people on staff so in order to be able to receive grants and reimbursement. So it's been a positive thing, and again, run by the County of San Luis Obispo. We had a great meeting with San Luis Obispo PD and Chief Cantrell, just to talk about SROs. We've been meeting with each of the Sheriff's Office, Morro Bay PD, just to make sure that we're all on the same page as we move forward, both with our SROs as well as we're going to start our facility inspections of all of our sites coming up. And so we're excited about that, those next steps. And then I just heard word today that the Central Coast Economic Forecast is coming up. That's Friday, November 8th. So I'll send out an invite if anybody's interested in attending that. We'll get you on board to be able to watch that. It's a really good kind of overview of the county itself and kind of economics as well as the state and nation.
So I would definitely attend if you have the chance.
Great. Thank you. Educational services update, Ms. McGrath.
Yeah, just wanted to give you an update on the Baywood Two-Way Immersion Program. We did put out a survey to the coastal community and asked if there were any coastal community members that would like to participate on three different committee opportunities. So we had an advisory group, we have an enrollment group, as well as a special education group. So that did close yesterday, and we are looking at the applicants. I can tell already that we have more participation requests than we might be able to fill, but we're trying to look for as many ways for them to be involved as possible. And also, we will be following up with people to let them know how we might be able to include them in the three different committee options that are occurring at this time, to also let them know that there may be future opportunities, as well as other community forums and other maybe more modern, creative opportunities for people to participate as well. So just wanted to give you an update that we are making progress with that, and as well as internal progress as well of program development and enrollment ideas and such. So looking forward to moving forward with that program.
Great. Ms. Prime.
Kim, thanks. I just wanted to, will the board get information when those, you know, if we wanted to sit in on the advisory committees, would we get information on
the
dates?
We'll keep you up to date on the different committees. And you also have, I think it's three board meeting updates as well,
right,
about progress that is happening at a more formal setting as well.
Okay.
We'll keep you up to date.
Thanks.
Thank you. Great to see all that response. That's wonderful. Hi, Measure D update.
Yeah, so I just have one. We have the Bishop's Peak Multipurpose Room grand opening this Thursday at 8 a.m. We'd love for everyone to be there, and they're really excited to kick off that facility and start to use it. So it should be, it's very nice.
Yeah.
No hard hats necessary. Unless you want to walk through the office modernization, and then yes, bring your hard hat.
Yeah, it'll be fun. All right. The next on the agenda is a resolution for determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials.
Yeah, hello. At last board meeting, we had a public hearing for sufficiency of textbooks and instructional materials. And this meeting, you have in front of you a resolution on the matter.
All right. Is there any board discussion? Is there anyone from the public here to talk about determination of sufficient textbooks? Right. This is a resolution. So we need a... Yes, thank you, Mrs. Rogers.
Okay, I'll move approval of Resolution 06-19-20, Determination of Sufficient Textbooks and Instructional Materials.
Second.
Motion by Mrs. Rogers, second by Ms. Frame. Ms. Dawson.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Ms. Roger?
Yes.
Ms. Sheffer?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. Next on our agenda is a discussion regarding information technology. Jeremy, thank you for coming and doing this for us.
Got to make it a little taller. No problem. It's good to see you guys. It's been a while since you've had me hang out with you. So, yeah, I have I briefly want to do one slide. You know, just it's a discussion, right? Not a presentation. So, I'm here to talk about just the IT strategy that we've employed here at San Luis Coastal, and really what the approach is, a layered approach. Because the way I look at it, especially in my prior career outside the district, it's not if but when. We cannot assume everything we put in place is going to protect us. It's going to happen. You know what I mean? And we got to create layers, and we got to do everything we can, and then be ready and plan for that what-if moment, right? And so the first and foremost that I always like to talk about, and I know that ransomware is hot on everybody's minds, and we've seen that article out of Texas where Texas schools got hit really, really hard with ransomware. Pitney Bowes today just announced that they were hit in many of their operations with ransomware. In my prior career, I had clients, I've been through about 15 different ransomware recoveries, so I'm very familiar with the process and what happens. And the number one thing that you need to do to survive a ransomware is to have data backup. And data backup in that regard is not just having a backup, but having our backup in multiple locations, right? So having a backup in one location, and then having it replicated at a different site, which we do here at San Luis Coastal. So we encrypt our backups, we encrypt the data transfer here at San Luis Coastal at two separate sites. In addition, that's not good enough, just in case that one random emergency that we have, you know, that huge earthquake or that tsunami. So at the same time, we also replicate our data to an offsite location somewhere in the Midwest of the United States as well. And that data sits encrypted and it's protected as well at a different site. And that's for that ultimate what-if scenario that happens. So that's the first, right? Because your data backup is your last line of defense when everything goes wrong. Next is patch management. Patch management, a lot of people don't realize, is super important for protecting the systems. You really have to make sure that you update everything, because bad actors are constantly looking for holes. And there was the Eternal Blue breach that happened. It was a CIA tool that was stolen, and then bad actors is using that to break into systems and exploit it with ransomware. So at San Luis Coastal, we update our Windows machines every Wednesday after Patch Tuesday. Okay, so we look for that and we update them. When Google comes out with the Chromebook releases, we update those as soon as possible, and other devices. We update our switches and our access points and our printers and all those devices that hook into our network as soon as we can get those updates, because leaving ourselves vulnerable with anything is a huge risk. Okay, so next is web protection, and this is really a huge one to look at, because this is not just protecting the systems and hardening them, but it's also protecting the students, right? So first and foremost, with our email system with the students, they cannot receive emails from the outside world. It's only within the district, and that's something really key to understand, because that prevents like bullying from the outside. It prevents threats coming in, so we can control the email inside our ecosystem. At the same time, we also use Bark. Bark we put on top of the Google Suite, and Bark allows us to see just if what's happening within the Google. So if two kids are emailing each other and there's bullying happening within the environment, or there's other kind of potential situations where there's a student at risk, then we can see it and we get notified by Bark, and the site administrators can then go address it with the students. And then lastly is our web filter that we have. We use a K-12 industry-specific web filter that complies with the CIPA Act, which is the Child Internet Protection Act. And we're required to make sure that, you know, we filter the internet and we keep it relatively safe for students, at least web traffic, that is. And so that's how we do it with the web filter. And the web filter also keeps a lot of the viruses and the malware and a lot of that stuff out of our site as well, because it not only blocks for obscene websites, but also websites that are nefarious in nature as well. Okay? And then as I go through it, user education. And I think user education, personally, is one of the, in a lot of different industries, is not really looked at too heavily or not seen as very important. And we have to understand you can't always fix technical problems with technology. A lot of it has to be solved with the end users. And one of the things I was really excited about when I joined up with San Luis Coastal is we do provide, you know, student training when it comes to technology. And one of the things that we provide is the digital citizenship curriculum with the common sense, through common sense. And one of them that I noticed is the internet privacy and security. So it's not just about providing all these tools to protect, it's also equipping our students and our staff to understand when there's threats and what to do if they've got themselves in a weird part of the internet, or, hey, you know, don't buy that Amazon gift card, this kind of stuff, you know. And so I like that we do that user education. And last but not least is endpoint security. And that's just making sure you have antivirus on your servers and your workstations. We upgraded our antivirus this year, so one of the really cool features is that when it's on a server, it can see if our data is being encrypted, and then it can stop it, and it can start rolling it back. It's not always 100%, like I said, multiple layers, but at least it's another, you know, arrow in our quiver that we can draw from whenever there's a certain situation. So I can keep going. I could teach a college seminar on all the protections we have, but I really just want to open it up to any of your Q&A that you may have and go from there.
So how do you keep up with the threats that are out there and what's coming down the line?
That's a great question. First of all, that's great. I read a lot. I read a lot, a lot, a lot. I read a lot what's going on. I also subscribe to U.S. CERT. It's from the Department of Homeland Security. They release the latest threats so you can track what's going on, and they also tell you, like, if there's exploits with certain software or hardware out there in the technology sector, they notify us, and you can do it yourself over Twitter. And so I comb through those updates, and I look to see if there's something that we have on site, and then we can go and, you know, harden ourselves for that or update accordingly. But also it's reading and researching, and I'm still in touch heavily with outside industry experts in my field that I had before coming to the school district, because I feel like just communication and keeping those lines of communication open and what's going on is also key as well.
Thank you. Any other questions from the board? Yes, Ms. Frank.
Go ahead.
I just thought of something. Is there kind of like a county-wide, or, you know, kind of sharing of this information to, you know, school districts?
Yeah.
You know, okay.
Yeah, so we meet quarterly with the COE, and we all the school district IT directors, we all meet, and we talk about our struggles and what's kind of going on and the challenges we face out there as well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anything else? Anyone from the public? You need to come up to the microphone and state your name, and then we'll start the timer.
Hi, my name is Sarah Yasutake. I have a daughter in second grade at Del Mar Elementary. And I don't know, I'm not really that familiar with this topic, except for that I know last year she was in a first, second grade split class, and there was a problem with some boy who had looked up apparently naked women or something on the internet and accessed it, I guess. And then I recently was informed by some friends of mine who have their kids in the other second grade class this year, actually the same teacher that my daughter had last year, that again this same thing happened, which I think that father, one of those fathers, might have spoken to you guys at a previous meeting. Anyway, I guess I heard what he said, and it sounds like, you know, they have some protections in place, but it seems like clearly it is not sufficient. There needs to be something else happening to protect the kids. You know, they shouldn't have access to just general searching on the internet if this kind of thing is going to come up, not just once, but, you know, a second time. That's it. I don't know if we can just ban Google searches. I don't know why first and second graders really need to be doing. I mean, I volunteered in that class, so I knew what's going on, which is that they're writing papers and then they're searching for images, like, of an Arctic wolf or something to put in, if that's what they're writing about. But if, I don't know, if we can't protect, if we can't sort of stop what they're able to search for, then maybe we shouldn't allow them to be searching at all, or else, I don't know what other, but I feel like something else needs to be done beyond just what's in place right now, based on these two experiences. That's all.
Thank you. So, Dr. Prater, would you like to discuss this at all, or Jeremy, I know you have ways to backtrack and...
Yeah, so I don't know about the first incident she's referencing from last year, but I know of the most recent one. And so we did backtrack, and we did find the video in question. The video in question did not contain any nudity whatsoever. It was suggestive nudity, but there was no nudity, you know what I mean? So this video did not meet the level of being considered obscene as well by CIPA requirements. And so that's... yeah, so that's why there was no filter to catch it, or there was no reason to stop it. The video is honestly just really a poor video, just like there's a ton of those on YouTube. But in the nature of being obscene, and especially when it comes to nudity, there was no nudity within that video whatsoever.
Thank you.
Is there ways, Jeremy, like if you
go ahead.
Even if it's a bad video or whatever it is type of thing, can you block a site? Can you manually go in and block things like that, or no?
Yes and no. A site, yes. YouTube, it's a little bit different. Okay, so first of all, like, we also have to be very, very careful because there's a tight lot, there's a tightrope that we have to walk between obscenity and censorship. Just want to verbalize that out there. So we can block sites, but when do we, what's the line? You know what I mean? So with YouTube, we do have YouTube set at the most restricted mode, especially in elementary schools. But the challenge is YouTube itself is a site and not just, and the videos within it are on that site. And to some degree, we're at the mercy of YouTube, checking those videos. And then at the same time, our web filter catching those as well. Keep in mind, though, we have had a video in the past. It was a music video that was considered obscene. We worked with Google very quickly to have it blocked and removed from YouTube's site. So.
It's my understanding now that YouTube now offers, is it YouTube for kids? There's a separate YouTube location.
They've been like slowly cleaning up their act because they got sued and they lost in court, YouTube did. And so a lot of it was like kid exploitation within videos and stuff like that because, and so they've been slowly cleaning up. I don't know that much about the YouTube for kids.
Okay. And then in the past, before there was every kid had his own device, mm-hmm. there were the computer labs, and there was a computer lab tech. And it was my understanding that the computer lab tech would do the search, create a file, and then the students would be then searching within a file that had already been made specifically for, say, the California missions.
Okay.
So they were not searching off-site. And I don't know if that's still a practice.
I can't answer to that, unfortunately.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Anything else?
Well, I do kind of wonder.
Yes.
Jeremy, do you know the recent occurrence that the speaker referred to? Do you know if the students accessing that non-pornographic but suggestive video or whatever, if that was deliberate or unintentional?
What do you mean by the student finding it?
How did they get it? To it? Yeah, how did
I don't know, and that's unfortunately, the way it gets reported to us is there's an obscene video, and so we, try to collect as much information, okay? Like, what's the student's name that reported it, what they were doing when they found it. But at this time, we don't know what they were doing, whether they were searching for a different video and it popped up on the side panel, or they were specifically searching for that. I don't truly have the answer, and I know that the site administrator at that school site would probably be better to answer that.
Okay, thank you.
Because we also don't get we don't directly reach out to students as well. We work with site administrators and filter that that way.
So it sounds like we're making every effort to prevent students accessing inappropriate materials.
Yes, and when this stuff is reported, I personally take ownership of this and work with one of our network engineers or network technicians to make sure that it's handled as quickly as possible, because if there is nudity, that violates obscenity, and honestly, I personally want to make sure that we get rid of it as fast as humanly possible.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your efforts.
Jerry, one question. Are we set up to block ads? So I know, any of us, or when we're searching for something, there will be ads that will pop up that we don't ask for, but they're there, and sometimes they're not what we want to see. Can that also happen in our system?
I don't directly know the answer to that. I know what you mean. I know that especially when we're using, I'm going to call it adult YouTube, some of those ads are pretty questionable. I do agree with you. I have never seen that at our school site. So Google is filtering their ads based on, the restrictions that we have in place, because even when I see them, wow, these are pretty vulgar, with some of them. In the pop-up ads, I don't see many pop-up ads anymore. That's an older technology, but the ads maybe in the bars, I honestly don't know. If they come from a site, a lot of those are hyperlinks from a separate site, and if they're nefarious, they will be blocked. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it'll just show like an X on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Okay, anything else? Thank you.
Thank you
very much. Yeah. All right, next is item 9.02, the California Assessment of Student Performance and Progress Results.
Yes. Previously, we looked at the district results for last year's SBAC assessment, and now the state has certified the results for the entire state of California. So we have the comparisons between all the school districts within our county and also the state of California. In English language arts, we did very well. As we usually do. Last year, we included South San Francisco. I didn't feel at the end of the time of talking about it with different sites and presenting it to the board that it added a lot to the conversation, so we excluded it this time. We're looking for a district with almost an exact match to ours to put into a comparison group. But these are the districts within our county, the whole county as a whole, and then the state of California averages. These numbers, again, are students who met standard or exceeded the standard on the English Language Arts assessment for CASP. This is a four-year countywide comparison. This is from the 2016 school year to this last May, when the assessments were complete. California averages on top. And what you can see for San Luis Coastal is what I refer to frequently as slow growth over time. You know, especially when the numbers get up to 70% meeting or exceeding, your growth is going to be slow over time, and that's exactly what we're looking for. Comparing non-SED students on the left-hand side of the screen with our socioeconomically disadvantaged students on the right-hand side of the screen, you know, this is the achievement gap that we often refer to, and what we're working very hard at closing. But our non-socioeconomically disadvantaged students do very well, period, but in comparison to other county school districts and the state of California as well. And then our socioeconomically disadvantaged students on the right-hand side, we're at nearly 50% who are meeting or exceeding the standard, but we still have some work to do in that area, and we work on it diligently to move those students forward. Our EL group on the left-hand side of the page and the redesignated functional English proficient students, or RFEP, on the right-hand side of the page, remember that as students gain proficiency, they move from English learner status to RFEP status. And so the students in that 18% for our district for this last year will be in consideration for redesignating as functional English proficient during this school year. But nearly 70% of the students, the RFEP students within our district, who were former English learner students, are now meeting or exceeding the standard in English language arts, and that's pretty good. Looking at students with disabilities, you know, you can see the comparison there. We're at about 27%, not quite a third of our students with disabilities meeting or exceeding the standard. This is a new slide we put in this year. I like this because it showed a little bit about the achievement gap and the movement of the different groups over time. So at the very top of the page, you have the non-socioeconomically disadvantaged. The purple is the RFEP group with, you know, really outstanding results there. Below that in green is the socioeconomically disadvantaged group. Below that in red, students with disabilities, and then the English learner group below that. In mathematics, similar achievement. We're at about 64%. The state of California at about 40%. I've read several articles recently about, you know, math results statewide and the concern that many districts have, and it's something that we continue to work on at the secondary level. We're meeting with math teachers on the 8th of November to talk about the MDTP, which is a new benchmark assessment we're using this year, and to grow their ability to look at test results and change their instruction within the classroom. So mathematics remains something at the forefront for us to continue to improve. And this is similar to the slide we looked at previously, a four-year comparison, looking at California on the top and San Luis Coastal, third set of bars down, slow growth over time. In mathematics, non-socioeconomically disadvantaged students on the left-hand side, socioeconomically disadvantaged on the right-hand side. It's really graphic how it stands out, the difference in achievement between those two groups. English learners on the left-hand side of the page and redesignated functional English proficient students, or RFEP, on the right-hand side of the page, 57% of those students meeting or exceeding standard in mathematics, significantly higher than the rest of the school district, or the rest of the county, pardon me. And then same thing with students with disabilities, similar to what we saw with English language arts and mathematics instruction. See the growth there in the non-SED students at the top. Purple is RFEP, pretty much the same order except for the bottom two groups between EL and students with disabilities. And then, the strong points for us are we're highest overall English language arts and math achievement in the county, highest both non-SED and SED achievement in the county. Highest EL math achievement in the county, highest RFEP, English language arts and math achievement, and highest students with disabilities in both language arts and math within the county. But we still have a lot of work to do, and we still work on closing the achievement gap and looking at those subgroups of students and breaking that data down all the way to the classroom level by student, and teachers looking carefully at the development and growth of each individual within the classroom.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public here to discuss this item? Okay, we'll come back to the board. Any questions from the board? Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Thank you. I'm curious about how gnarly the math part is. And do we do a comparison at all with sort of Silicon Valley? Is it that we just have a different environment that we're working in? It's not as... we're not as techy here or as mathy, to make up a word. Did you do a comparison at all? Do we ever compare ourselves to the Silicon Valley area in terms of math?
I have not looked at that data. No, we look at our own individual data, as I mentioned before, across schools. We're always looking to improve regardless of the results. So as I mentioned, even though our results are significantly higher, we're still looking at how we can improve that. But no, not specifically into the Silicon Valley.
I'd just be curious to know what kind of materials they're working with, or if it's if it's simply a matter of the raw material that you're working with. But it could be if there's something that's new about how to teach math. Maybe that would be a place to look.
We're always looking. I received an email today from Mrs. Danelli asking about attending a conference with Joe Bowler up at Stanford University, and we're looking at ways that we can fund that. So it's something that just we're constantly looking at what's out there in mathematics and how we can improve our teachers' ability to teach.
Thank you. That's encouraging.
Mr. Bruckman.
Thanks. First of all, Rick, I want to thank you for the...
Sure.
Talking to me for, I think we spent about a half hour, and I truly appreciate it. It gave me good perspective. One of the questions I asked that was very helpful was, how is staff, how is administration determining how much data to present to us? And I thought your answer
right.
was good, so if you would share that.
Yeah, I would say it's a continual debate. There's an infinite number of data points that we could take a look at, and it's a matter of which ones are we going to look at and which ones are going to really inform as to how we can improve student instruction. I can tell you that at the cabinet level, we're looking at data in great detail at school sites, and at school sites in particular, looking at data in great detail about specific students. I know recently many schools have gone through their intervention days. This is about the time of the year right before reporting period coming up for schools to make sure their interventions are in a row and looking in detail at students' beginning of the year scores and making sure that they're in intervention. So, if you look at the California Department of Education website, there's great detail of data nowadays, and we go into that equally great detail at different levels in different sites depending on what we're after.
And so just following up on Catherine's comments on the math, and my memory's not the best, but it was several years ago, and we as a board were presented, I think, with the, I can't remember what test it was at the time because they keep changing the name for some reason. And we were able to see, because the data was a little more disaggregated, we were able to see that in math, we were, you know, kindergarten through sixth grade was a pretty good increase, and then eighth grade and beyond was just flat or worse. And so I don't know if you've had a chance to look at that yet, but that kind of data, that's where the board first started to see the need for doing some math work.
So, we do look at that data when determining what professional development to provide. And so when we look at specific grade levels and you know, different levels of schooling, whether it be elementary, middle, or high school, and where we need to focus our attention in terms of professional development, absolutely.
So have we had a chance, I know this is new data, chance to look at the math yet?
Do we have,
Okay.
And I'd be happy to share that with you.
Okay, and you did. I appreciate it. So I guess where I'm headed in this is, I'm just wondering, and I think it goes along with just a little more disaggregation for me. I'm just laying that out. I'm not asking for anybody to do any work. It just, for me, sometimes that works just to see it a little better. For example, the data, the state uses four sections, right? So exceeding, met, nearly, and not.
Correct.
And I'm just, I was a little confused why we lumped them into two rather than showing the four. And as an example, when we look at the EAL students and we say not and nearly, and it's this percent, I actually would like to see if it's in, you know, if it's all lying in the not or nearly, and that would really make me happy because I think we could see improvement, the gradual improvement that you're talking about. So that's just
we could certainly provide that detail, no problem.
Then I have one other. There was a you give me 1 second. No, I think that's great. I appreciate your. I appreciate the hard work that goes into doing this.
Absolutely.
Ms. Frame.
Thanks, Rick. I'm wondering. You can answer this. You know, the dashboard has changed, and as we look at, and tell me if this is a, you know, for a different discussion. As you know, we look at. The LCAP that's going to be coming up. You know, one thing, and I heard this at the conference that I went to, is, you know, what is that data point that goes across, you know, across subgroups? And it was parent education. And it was, you know, so I'm wondering as if the dashboard, you know, has changed and they're kind of looking at that more, and the commonality between your EL students and your true SED is that parent education, if that could be, I don't know, a tighter benchmark to then, you know, we look at over the years, because, you know, that's the kind of commonality between, you know, those groups, and it's something that... the parents, I mean, it's something the California dashboard, I don't know when they started that, but I don't know, is that something to look at for LCAP or something to just, I don't know.
Perhaps it would be. Well, certainly we look at that at school sites, you know, all those factors are taken into consideration, not necessarily looking at, you know, overall gross data, but rather looking at individual cases at a school site.
Dr. Prater. Sorry.
What I like about this conversation is the state and local districts in California are becoming more sophisticated in how they break down and disaggregate data. And we've become increasingly more sophisticated inside our cabinet team and at sites with our principals, but we're not claiming to have figured it out. So there are some things like the California dashboard. I actually was participating in a 2-year group that met in Sacramento for the California Coalition of Educational Excellence, and they had talked about the dashboard in particular and how they were trying to create data connections that better sifted out the antecedents for achievement, and you know, and the breakdown. You know, why is that gap occurring?
Right.
And
right.
And we know parent education is a component of it. Poverty is a component of it. But I certainly look forward, we talk about this in cabinet all the time, is getting more and more sophisticated mm-hmm. and narrowing down our focus, not necessarily broadening it, but narrowing it so we can really understand when we, because the real work is with teachers and principals
yes.
with their children at the school sites, in the classrooms, and how we help them better understand how to support students in the classrooms and principals, how they support their teachers to meet the needs of kids so that our focus is the right focus.
Exactly.
And so I do want to say one thing to respond to Dr. Eisendrath-Rogers' comment about have we looked at Silicon Valley. And I think it's so interesting how quickly we forget that 6 years ago, when we adopted Bridges and the College Preparatory Math curriculum, we did that because we spent time with Jay Bowler and we went to Silicon Valley Education Foundation and actually spent months working with them in consultation. In fact, our assessment criteria for math placement is SVMI, coming from the Silicon Valley Math Institute. So we are heavily invested in that philosophy of what's going on in the Silicon Valley. Right now, I haven't done a comparison analysis because
right.
I'm not sure what our similar school would look like there. I'm not sure. I'm certain there might be some comparisons that can be drawn. Personally, for my interest, I'm more interested in earmarking relative progress indicators that show that all groups of kids are moving mm-hmm. each year progressively. And I would like to see that occur faster, of course. But I can easily imagine, and I've said this to many people, that if we maintain our focus and really hone in on the proper interventions and the proper supports and the proper professional development strategies, I'm certain that we can close our gap dramatically. I'm certain that our non-socioeconomically disadvantaged kids in our district in math are up at 82% proficient. Our socioeconomically disadvantaged in ELA, we're up at around
47, yeah.
So I think the acceleration and the support there, I imagine that we can get within 5 years a 85% for our non-socioeconomic and 70% for our socioeconomic, which would be a dramatic statement that what we're doing is working. So I've done those projections at 5% indicators,
yep.
and I think we can get there. But it will require the proper focus and the proper intervention.
Yeah. We have a meeting first thing tomorrow morning to discuss the multi-tiered system of support work that we're doing to make sure that we have the intervention support to do just that.
Ms. Frame, do you have additional?
Well,
and then Mr. Buckman and then Ms. Rogers.
I guess, Dr. Prater, I think, you know, when I'm looking at the two groups, the SED versus non-SED, as we look at, you know, individual schools or our district, because the state has changed that definition and we have families that are included in the SED population that are not truly SED. They're either underemployed, but they're... So what I worry about is, even though I know this board and the district is very committed to closing the achievement gap, we may actually be masking some of the information that we could get if we weren't really tightening up and looking up that variable that's going across. Because, you know, it's the same with our RFEP data. Our RFEP data includes, you know, initial IFEPs, which are, you know, typically, you know, high SES students, and so that's consolidated, where, you know, that benchmark parent education really disaggregates that kind of poverty and that lack of, that information that we need to really hone in. And I'm not questioning, you know, our district's commitment. It's just that it would be great to be able to just not to not do this, but just, you know, look at that and look at that trajectory as you are. I mean, it's there in the, you know, it's in there in the dashboard. So right. It's not like, you know, extra right. data. And so that's why I just don't want to, you know, that sense of urgency that I know you share, Dr. Prater, and everybody shares is, even though we're doing great, it's that those kids that have not support at home, continually targeting what that looks like with mm-hmm. the multi-tiered system. So yeah. it just made sense to me when, and I know some districts are beginning to look at that, and specifically saying in their LCAP, that's the group they want to look at across the board, because like I said, it includes right. your EL, it includes, you know, your poverty kids. So right. that's all.
Sorry. And I would add that at the site level, that sort of disaggregation is occurring. And they're making sure that students who meet that criteria are in the interventions that they need to be successful.
Mr. Buckman?
Thanks.
Oh, sorry, Dr. Prater.
No, I would say I honor that. I think we can add those pieces to it. And I imagine and I envision that we'll be able to do just what you're saying. Yeah, and fold that into the LCAP. This is the time.
Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. Dr. Prater's comments sparked something. I think Dr. Prater said it's good that we continue to track and important by grade level, track improvement by grade level. And in the past, at least once we were able to see like a cohort of kids, and it came to my attention today through Dr. Mayfield, Rick Mayfield helping me, that there's tracking a cohort that's exactly the same kids, and then there's just the cohort of, here's what the third grade did last year, that same group of kids did this in the fourth grade.
Yes.
And I was excited about that. So if that, again, is...
I'm sorry.
I
feel like I'm at a round table.
Yeah, it's great.
I'm sorry to keep interjecting, but my microphone won't turn off, this is dangerous.
Can we change microphone?
But what I will say to that is that presentation is coming. What this is just a county comparison. That's all this is tonight. That's why it's general. Okay. But that more detailed analysis is coming in the spring. Or in the late winter to do the cohort analysis, because we'll need that when we do our LCAP.
Yeah, which is going to drive
it. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Good luck, Rick.
It's a good thing to spend my time doing.
Marilyn, did you have anything
no.
else? Okay, Mr. Pinkerton?
Yeah, just one more thing to tie into Dr. Prater. Just so that everyone knows, all of this data is online. Yes. Anyone can pull up any school, any grade level, yep. the different types of groups. I mean, the state has done a much better job of having a tool that people can use to actually look at scores, which has been really nice.
Thank you. Anything else on this?
Nope.
All right. So you are still up, and next is California's accountability system and the dashboard.
Yeah, great. So the California School Dashboard is updated every year. Our local indicators are due on the 1st of November officially, and it needs to be presented to the board. So tonight we're going to take a look at the local indicators, which are different from the state indicators on the dashboard. So the dashboard, as you can see up there, is an online accountability tool, shows how districts are performing. When you get online, Mr. Pinkerton said, with the SBAC data, it's the same thing with the dashboard. There's quite a bit of detailed data available there, and you can really dig into how districts are doing in lots of different areas, some of which I'll cover tonight. But it's intended to be used to identify strengths and weaknesses and areas of growth for a district and a school, and not necessarily as a comparison tool between districts or schools. So it's a little bit different tool there. As you can see there are two different kinds. State indicators are based on state collected data. SBAC scores would be one of those things. And then local indicators, we use tools and go through these tools to report locally on how we're doing in several different areas. And the categories that you can have are met, not met, not met for two or more years. Okay, so local indicators are, there are actually 10 altogether, but only certain ones are reported as local and others are reported as state indicators. But number one would be first best instruction, teachers, instructional materials, and facilities. Number two, implementation of academic standards. Number three, parent engagement. Four and five are state indicators, and so not reported out in local indicators. Number six would be school climate. And then number seven, access to a broad course of study. Okay, so in priority one, which would be credentialed teachers, we look and see that we have properly credentialed teachers in the classrooms for what they're teaching. Students have access to instructional materials and facilities are in good repair. And again, we have tools that we go through to verify that those things are correct. And we have met that category for priority one. Okay, and priority two is implementation of academic standards, the adoption of academic standards, instructional materials aligned with standards, and support staff with implementation of those standards. We had a training today on English language development and spent some time talking about with secondary English teachers the English language development standards. Priority three, parent engagement, seek input from parents and guardians in school and district decision making, promote parental participation in programs, the LCAP survey, and we're looking at some different tools for parent engagement. One is called Thought Exchange, which we're just in the preliminary stages of looking at, and Mrs. McGrath will perhaps share a little bit about that in the future, but it's really exciting to look at these different tools to get to our parents and not just have the usual Thursday night 6 o'clock meeting where we don't get the turnout that we desire. And so to look at different methodologies of engaging with the community in a meaningful way. So that's exciting. School climate would be administration of the California Healthy Kids Survey and then analysis of those results and then report results to the school board. You heard tonight about the Youth True Survey, which is in line with that school climate. And then access to a broad course of study, enrollment of students into a broad course of study according to the Ed Code, a use of tools to track student enrollment, and then remedy any issues with student enrollment that occur. So we're met in all of the areas of the local indicators on the California dashboard. You can access the dashboard. There's a link there at the top of the page, californiaschooldashboard.org. I don't recall the date that the new updated dashboard will be released, but it'll be later this year, and at that time I'll come back with a presentation on the state indicators.
Okay. Is there anyone from the public here to address the board on this topic? Okay. Any questions from the board, comments? All right. Thank you, Rick. And you're just running the show tonight. Next is item 9.04, approval of the 2019-2020 single plans for student achievement.
Yeah, so the single plans for student achievement are mandated by the state of California for all of our schools. It's a comprehensive document on the activities that will occur at a school site to improve instruction, to provide interventions to students who need it, provide a culture of care, and it aligns, of course, with our board-adopted goals. We had to standardize after the FPM event that we had last year. We standardized some of the things with the SPSA as a single plan for student achievement for this year. But by and large, it's a document that is individual to the site, and the site comes up with the different activities and the ways that they go about looking at improving things at their site. It's exciting to read them all and to look through at what all the different schools are up to and what they're planning for the school year. So we invited Mrs. Storm and Mrs. Danelli to share a couple activities. And Mrs. Storm, I believe this is your slide.
So Mr. Mayfield said I could come and talk about thinking maps. And I love to talk about thinking maps. So What I do, I'm a thinking maps nerd, but they are 8 visual tools based on a thinking process. So there's defining, describing, categorizing, sequencing, cause and effect, compare and contrast, part to whole, and scene analogies. And then on your map, you can frame it. You can frame it before, you can frame it during, you can frame it after, with your source, your point of view, or your conclusion. And we call it the so what or so why. And I put some maps up here, and I want to show you how they grow up. So this is all the same thinking process. This is all compare and contrast. This is all the double bubble map. The first one up there is in TK, and they are looking at bats and birds in science. So you have, I think this might be that bats are out at night, but birds are out in the day, so the contrast is actually contrast, not just everything that's different. The next one over is kindergarten, math, comparing and contrasting the 5 frames. So you have one that's, according to Mrs. McCarty's class, serious, and another one that's silly with the colors mixed up, but it's still 5. And you see that there's so what, so why on there of ways to make 5, and order doesn't matter to make 5. You just have 5. And then this one is out of first grade. They did some color coding there with friends and bullies. So they were talking social-emotional learning, what are things that are the same and what are things that are different, friends and bullies. And then I caught this one, the orange one in third grade, talking about second grade narrative writing versus third grade narrative writing. And they framed that with, this helps us know how to grow. And then actually this one was student work. I found it in, I believe, a fourth grade classroom. Tiger Rising, 2 characters, Rob and Sistine, comparing and contrasting. So you can see subject areas, grade levels, it's always the same math based, or same map based on the thinking process. So these are in our SPSA because we started back in 2015 with 4 teachers becoming what we call trained trainers. So they go to 5 days of training and then they come back and train the staff. And then we rolled out school-wide. We've been school-wide for a while. But they did a trained trainer over the summer in Atascadero. And they don't often do them up here. You usually have to go like to LA or to Bakersfield. So I sent 3 more staff because every trained trainer that you have has just a level of knowledge that's above. So we now have someone at kindergarten, someone at first grade, someone at second grade, someone at third grade, and our fourth grade team. So we have almost every grade level covered with trained trainers. And it's just, if you walk around Monarch Grove classrooms, they are everywhere all the time. I'm sure you've seen them. Mrs. Frame was part of them. But I just wanted to show you a little snippet of comparing, contrasting. They're a mid-range tool, so this is not the end. We tell the kids, speak the map, and then you can write the map. So that's thinking maps.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
I just have it. Hello. Thank you for having me tonight. So I wanted to share a little bit about the culture of care area of our school plan. And, you know, last year, LOMS, we had the opportunity to go to a Schools to Watch conference up in Sacramento, and we brought a team of teachers. And those conferences are amazing because they're just filled with the best that's happening in middle schools across the state. And one of the things that our team came away with is really focusing on student connectedness and student connection to school. And it's interesting because we felt like LOMS does a fabulous job with this. Kids are connected in so many ways here, from the academic program to clubs to sports, just to relationships they have. But we borrowed a couple of ideas from other schools that we thought were things we could do to strengthen our program. And so I wanted to share those with you tonight. You'll see them in our school plan in the culture of care area. And we lovingly have called this with our staff Team Loam's Connections, but I just wanted to focus on two areas. And one is our advisory program, and the other is student connection program, student connection time. So Loam's has had an advisory period in the day, which is like the first 10-15 minutes of the first period of the day. And that's been really just kind of an open time where teachers can have class discussions or kind of do as they wish to connect with their kids. But our staff was really interested in having a common experience and common message across the day for our students. And so we worked together to develop an advisory program. And it focuses, interestingly, it focuses on the goal areas developed by our Student Senate, which are college and career connections, like how is what we're doing in school connect to life outside of school? What do we know about being prepared for high school and college? Organization and how kids are being prepared for what's coming next. And then, of course, proactive circle conversations or class discussions, which fall in a lot of areas, but are really like personal conversations around life as a middle schooler. And so we're doing that in advisory. We've heard really positive things. It's a work in progress for us, so we know we're just like stepping down the road and see this as a really great part of the program we're developing at Loam's. The other thing I wanted to highlight is student connection time. And, you know, sometimes it's the simplest idea someone gives you that you say, wow, that's amazing. And that's what this is for us. This is around duty, supervision, right? We have people out on supervision all the time. And really, you know, what is that time about? And a lot of times we see it as it's our time to make sure, you know, kids are behaving the way they're supposed to and they're not running in the halls and this. But we really said, let's reframe that and let's make that time about connecting with kids. And so we've reframed that, and we kind of, I think you can see it in this vision up here, that if we have 10 teachers out every day throughout the day on supervision, and we all have, and that in admin, everyone who's out there, and we have the intention of having at least one personal conversation with a student, maybe a student we know, maybe a student we don't know, that adds up, and cumulatively over the year, that's over 1,500 personal moments of connection that we may not have had. So it's like the simple thing we're already doing, but just being really intentional about it. And we're seeing and hearing great things. So I'm happy to share those with you and to hopefully share again as we see our work evolve in this. And I always like to say when I'm here, thanks for all of your hard work that you do to support our kiddos as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, the plans, you know, it's a document that we have to file, but they really come to life at the school sites and all the different activities that are happening through those single plans. And I want to thank Mrs. Donnelly and Mrs. Storm for coming and sharing just two of them. So a lot of exciting things happening at school sites.
I love that. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, those were both very interesting and informative. I've seen the thinking maps in action at Del Mar and at Monarch Grove, and I just think they're amazing, the way they engage the kids. And Ms. Donnelly, this is really wonderful. Is there anyone from the public here to speak to on this item? This is an action item. I'll bring it back to the board. This is required to be approved. Mr. Buckman?
Again, Rick and I, part of that time we spent on these reports, and Rick, if you could just again, as I looked through them, there was terminology within each of them that was exactly the same or really right. Similar, and I was like, oh, I thought they were being developed individually. If you could explain what that was for
sure.
Me again.
They are from a template, and so we produce like all the district data and populate that before we send it out to sites. And then some of the activities are very similar from site to site. So there's a secondary template and an elementary template. Things like all teachers will teach the math curriculum, bridges, you know, kindergarten through grade 5, that type of thing. So you will see similar language. But it's those special events, as were shared here earlier, that make up the majority of the SPSA.
And then the one other thing that for me I needed is there was a reference to teachers will use gradual release of responsibility framework, and I figured that was another
program that we had adopted, and it was in all caps, and it was like, oh my God, what is this one?
I wouldn't necessarily call it a program, but it's just basically the teacher models the lesson, then you do it together with the students, then the student does it independently. So I do, we do, you do.
And so I thought that was really, I think that's just a wonderful approach. I think it's great. Thank you. If there's nobody else, I'd like to make a motion to accept.
Any further discussion? A second? I'll second. Motion by Mr. Buckman, second by me. All in favor of approval of the 2019-2020 single plans for student achievement?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
And thanks again for coming, Ms. Donnelly and Ms. Storm. Okay, next is item 9.05, another discussion action item. This is the proposed grant of the easement at portion of the Pacific Beach site.
So as the board knows, we actually just went through kind of an easement process with Cal Poly, right, to put in a power line kind of over a corner. So this is a little bit different in that as part of the San Luis Ranch development, which is over kind of behind, what's the area?
Between
Los Sosa Valley Road, Madonna Ride, those areas, behind the car dealers.
Yeah.
But basically, as they do that development, there are some things that the city is making them do, some improvements. And so one of those is putting new bike lanes throughout that entire area, which is Costco, Home Depot, and Target. And then, of course, we have Pacific Beach property there. So so they reached out to us. And so the goal of this is that they would pay us for the small piece of property, right, to actually put the bike lane in. And then they would then grant the easement to the city of San Luis Obispo. So it becomes another bike lane, just like going to be on the other three corners, which is good for our kids, long run, right, in terms of biking to school. It's also something that I think long term, just for that property itself, to have some of those improvements made and done, those are things that we wouldn't be required to do in the future. So in talking to everybody about it, it just made sense to go ahead and work with the developer. They did an appraisal. We did an appraisal of the property. That's how we came up with the amount. To make sure that, you know, it wasn't something that they just made up, something off the top of their head. So that was an important process that we went through, worked with them. And so you'll see some different information today. If you go down a little bit, Mandy, in terms of what we're asking the board to do. And so it's basically an MOU to get this work accomplished. And so there's, is there one more document? Yeah. So there's four different documents that go along with this. So there's the easement for the city. There's actual MOU to do the work. There's the appraisal itself, and then the actual right of entry agreement, which is basically how they're going to do the work. That's kind of the contract that gets tied into it. So this went through Lozano Smith and our attorneys in terms of, you know, making sure that everything was proper and the way it should be. And we send that back out to San Luis Ranch owners, and they accepted all the changes that Lozano Smith had made to the initial MOU. So I'm recommending that that the board vote for the MOU today and we move forward. And again, there's other processes that will come next. So this is just the first step in terms of signing the MOU.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public here on this topic? All right, we'll come back to the board. Any questions? If not, this is an action item. We need a motion.
I do have... I do have just one question, and now that I'm thinking, so this is the MOU, but these things may be, the details may be cleared up later on, but I've watched road work and jackhammers and scraping, and I'm just concerned that there may be some way to control all the noise during the periods that we're doing the testing.
Yeah, and so I think it's like an 18-month period when they actually can do the work as they're moving through the road, as they're doing the other improvements around. So that's definitely something I can work with them on. There is a nuisance clause that's inside the very bottom grant agreement, Mandy, that kind of ties into that right of agreement actually has a nuisance clause in there.
Okay.
So I would work with them on that.
Okay, that's great. If no one else, I'll make a motion to accept.
Okay. Ms. Roger has a question.
I just wonder, Mr. Pinkerton, yep. I'm looking at the appraisal, and it looks that this appraisal, and I realize this has been blessed by our attorneys, and so I shouldn't, they know much more than I do, but I'm wondering why this appraisal appears to have been done at the behest of the developers and was done by a firm out of Temecula.
And then we did our own appraisal as well.
So this is the one appraisal that you have attached?
Mm-hmm. That's the one that they did, they put together. And then we actually have our own independent appraisal as well.
And did our appraised values?
Very similar.
Correspond? Yeah. Okay. All right, thank you.
And we actually got to see the other appraisal from the Home Depot side as well. So we were able to kind of look at all those properties.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Any further discussion? We have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Great.
So we'll be back.
Okay. Yes. All right. Next is item 9.06. It has to do with protocol for advanced agenda. Dr. Pritter.
Good evening, Board. Yes, on October 10th, last Thursday, we held a board study session to discuss, in part, the advanced agenda protocol that had been established in 2008. And recent experiences proved to be somewhat confusing. So it was requested that we reach out to legal counsel, Lozano Smith, to take a stab at it and try and make it a little more simple. And so in the board study session, the board discussed this along with Josh Whiteside from Lozano Smith, and there was a proposed advanced agenda protocol created, and we shared that and discussed it. And so the board asked me to bring this before you tonight for discussion and approval of the new protocol.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public here to discuss this? Are there, this is an action item, or is there any discussion by the board? If not, then we need a motion, please, to accept this. Mr. Buckman.
I just have two quick questions. One, were there any changes made between this and what we saw on Thursday?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
No.
And then I just want to be clear. Within this, my understanding is that an individual board member can approach the president or the superintendent and say, gosh, this might be something we might want to look at. And then there's a process for dealing with that.
Correct.
Okay. Great.
Yeah. Any further discussion? Right, then if we could have a motion to accept this.
I'll be happy to make the motion.
And a second?
A second.
We have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Ms. Frame. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, thank you. Our next item is 9.07. It is a approved board member pay for permissible absence. Dr. Prater.
Yes, thank you. I would like to have the board consider approving Mrs. Rogers' absence from one board study session and one board meeting for a family emergency.
Okay. Is there anyone from the public? Okay, I am not going to the public any longer because it's empty chairs. Our public is leaving. So this is an action item. We need I will move to accept to approve the board member pay for permissible absence.
And I'll second.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers is seconding. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
You cannot abstain. This is not a vote you can abstain from. So you need to either vote for it or against it.
I can't abstain?
No. No,
well,
she can't. I've done research on how you can abstain.
I've never heard of that, but okay, then I'll vote in favor.
Okay, and thank you.
Thank for your understanding and compassion.
No, limited. You can't. Okay, thank you. Motion carries. Okay, next, Ms. McGrath is going to talk to us about some proposed bylaw revisions.
Thank you. Tonight, the first board policy I have in front of you is 5145.2. This is the freedom of speech and expression board policy. So you can see here that based on the colors that you have, the red changes are gamut suggestions that have gone through their process. And then the next set of colors, you can see some great clarifications, subtractions, and additions from your board subcommittee, and even grammatical and other adjustments that needed to be made. So tonight would be the first reading of this board policy, and our typical pattern would be to bring it back for a second reading.
Is there any board discussion on this board policy? Carry on. It will be back on the consent agenda after tonight.
Thank you. We will move it forward to the second reading. The next policy I have in front of you is Board Policy 5145.12. This is a student policy based on search and seizure. So you can see that there were new legal requirements that you will see there in red that were additions to how student searches are to be handled. And then you can see that you've got a lot of shifting format up there. Yeah. So you can see that some of the information was found to be way too specific to land in a board policy. So the subcommittee was suggesting that some of this be considered for the AR. You can also see the subcommittee had some additions and things that were suggested be moved at the end there to the AR as well. So tonight would again be the first reading of this policy, and our typical pattern would be to bring it back for a second reading.
Any discussion by the board on this policy? Thank you. Next.
Great. The third board policy and final this evening is Board Policy 5146. This is a student policy on married, pregnant, and parenting students. You can see that there were some legal changes there, which ensures that students are not excluded from certain activities, and information required there on the back. The subcommittee did review this information and found gamut suggestions to be acceptable.
Any discussion or comments by the board? All right. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll bring them all for second reading.
Thanks. All right. We're moving on to the action consent portion of our program. If anyone would like something pulled, please let me know. 10.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 10.02, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 10.03, acceptance of donations. 10.04, approval of field study trip request, San Luis Obispo High School FFA to Indianapolis, Indiana. 10.05, approve revisions to Board Policy 0420, school plans, site councils, let's move forward as a second reading. 10.06, approve revisions to Board Policy 5141.52, suicide prevention, second reading. And 10.07, approve revisions to Board Policy 5144.1, suspension and expulsion due process, second reading.
Okay, I'll move approval, if there's no board discussion, of items 10.01 through 10.07.
I'll second that motion.
We have a motion by Mrs. Rogers, a second by Ms. Frame. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Next is advanced agenda. Nothing that has come forward that I know.
I have six items.
Reports by board members.
I guess I should do that.
Yeah, Ms. Frame.
I just wanted to say that I got a chance to visit, I was invited to visit Ms. Floyd Moffat's parent education class with Chris Unger. and pretty inspirational to see the parents engaged. And, you know, it's a great way for parents to learn things about literacy that they can do at home, and a great way to see, you know, former students and families. But it was very, very engaging for all the parents. So, anyway, thanks.
Thank you. Mrs. Roger.
I would just like to say that I have been out of town due to a family medical emergency, and I appreciate the understanding and compassion of my fellow board members regarding that absence. Thank you.
Of course. Anyone else? All right. Thank you. We'll see you next time. I am.
Are you going to go visit your bank?
I am. It's a...